Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, a show for marketers by marketers to talk shop and share insights of the ever-changing landscape of the digital world. My name is Katya, and I am your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. Grin is the number one creator management platform designed for the next generation of brands who recognize that in the creator economy, authenticity is everything. Now, to get insight on how Grin can help you manage your creator strategy, visit grin.co. That's grin.co. My guest today is Stefan Hedebrandt. He is the CMO at Dream Data, a revenue attribution platform that collects, joins, and cleans all the data to give an insightful value to your business. He is a subject matter expert in connecting marketing activities with revenue and is a notorious growth hacker with a very successful track record of scaling businesses and building teams at Upwork and Airtam. Stefan knows the pain points of rapidly scaling marketing and growth firsthand. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for my guest today, Stefan. Stefan, welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast. I'm really excited to be chatting with you today and really starting to dive into a little bit of the customer journey mapping, especially from sales to marketing.
Thank you for the invite, Katya. I'm super happy to be here.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's start with you just sharing a little bit about just kind of your experience with connecting marketing and sales departments together, like your experience with a customer journey. Tell me a little bit about you. You don't have to start with, you know, kindergarten. Just
catch me up to now. Yeah. So through my professional careers, ever since I finished university, I've always been working in B2B companies. And predominantly B2B companies where the internet or digital played a large part of the go-to-market. Yeah. So kind of everything I'm saying here, I'm biased by that background. Then you can say my interest in marketing and revenue being joined comes from pain, failures, and then seeing that what happens when you're actually able to do that as well. My first job out of university, I was part of like a vintage music instrument platform where, you know, local vendors could put up their music instruments. And then it was super important that our guitars and drums, etc., came first on Google when people are searching for these things. And we actually managed to do that exceptionally well. And we grew the traffic super much. But what we didn't manage to solve was actually to translate this increase in traffic. So we have like the six-digit traffic numbers organically from Google every month. But we didn't manage to find a valuable enough proposition to the customers, which would be these local guitar shops and drum shops, etc. So we didn't actually, you know, create enough revenue. And essentially that business kind of went out of business at some point. That really opened my eyes for like, you can be successful with different parts of the business, but you know, if you don't see that dollar from your work, then at some point you're going to be in trouble.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I've also seen the good parts when you're actually able to find a connection between your marketing activities, or at least a very closely related functionality between when you do stuff and then revenue comes out of it. Then you can make, you know, essentially you can make a whole company prosper, because when you spend money in marketing, you can clearly see that more money comes in from it. And then it kind of becomes almost like an investment where you just continuously want to put more money in, and you can just see the stock going up. So it's just been my experience that whenever it's possible to, you know, show a quite clear impact on your company's revenue, then you're most likely a successful marketer. And also, like, speaking in these times where there's a little bit more economic turmoil, maybe marketing isn't going to get shut down as fast, or people are not losing their jobs as fast, because it's clear to see for the organization that when Katya or Stefan does ABC, then they produce revenue out of those activities. So that's why I always, I'm a big speaker for trying to do as much as you can for finding that connection between your activities and producing the pipeline and revenue.
So I, as a marketer, love what you're saying. I think ideally, it's a language that all marketers know and understand, this attribution, trying to kind of make those connections that you're talking about, because it's true. Yeah. I wish that I could say, you know, this is a really bad example, but you know, this TV ad produced this dollar amount for my revenue, right? Like this was the return on investment. But the truth is that that doesn't always happen. We're not always able to connect that one-to-one. If it was that easy, we don't have bigger marketing departments. So like, what do you say in the event of like a marketer coming up to you and basically asking you, well, how do I chase down attribution for all of my marketing efforts to show that we should double down and invest in XYZ? Influencer marketing is a really great example of that. There's always this chasing the dollar, trying to figure out this return on investment on an influencer post. And while there are links and codes that are that one-to-one connection, how do you measure that?
That's super hard. And there is definitely stuff where the direct link is close to impossible to do, or at least you need to add a bit of guessing. And I think the example that you give with, you know, influencers posting stuff on Instagram, as you say, some might click the link, but others would just hit go directly to the Google and then type in whatever brand name that they just saw. And there it gets a little bit more unclear about what's going on, but at least maybe you can try to be aware about what are at least the input sources, you can say, or the activities that you carry out. Yeah. So keep an overview of, if let's say you're running 10 influencers, making sure that you know at which time do these influencers actually do posts. So if stuff happens immediately after that, then you can at least say that there's a clear correlation between when somebody posted and what happened afterwards. But it depends a lot on the different disciplines. If it's, you know, in this world where like I come from and most of our customers are, they are B2B companies and they have a large digital ad spend, and it's easier when you have clicks, because then you can say this click came to the website, they downloaded an ebook, and then 2 weeks later that company ended up buying or stuff like that. And then there's other activities like your influencer marketing, for example, where you also might want to be, you know, trying to record qualitative stuff where more like mentions, like this person mentioned me. And then you as a marketer in your company, you should make sure to take that screenshot. So you have that screenshot so you can tell your company that you have a narrative about this person with this audience posted this thing where they directly mentioned us.
Yeah.
That's a valuable piece for us.
No, I absolutely agree. Now, before we dig into that, because I don't want to get down that rabbit hole too far, because I will go down there because I have follow-up questions to that. I do want to just kind of go back to just sort of the attribution of it all. There are a variety of attribution models. Which one do you think is ideal for a marketer? Or is it a combination? Or maybe there's a time to use last click and there's a time to use first click. Tell me about the attribution model.
Before you apply any model, you want to make sure that you have as much data about the journey collected as possible. So any model you would apply to only, let's say, 5% of the journey, it's going to probably say something wrong. So if you only have very limited information about what journey is this person or this company actually taking, then whatever attribution model you select is most likely going to tell you something that is not true. But in, let's say in this state where you actually know 100% of all the touches that took place, then you can talk about which attribution models to use. I think if you have long journeys, so think complex products, typical B2B sales, then I would be very interested in these attribution models that looks to describe some of the first touches. At least as a marketer, because I want to understand what can I do more of that gets more of these customer journeys started. But if you have very, very short journeys, like for some B2C products, then it's like last click might be just fine because it's something you can make a decision upon within like one click. In a very B2C world, if that's my product, then I would be kind of okay just using a last click model for a lot of cases.
You bring up such a really good point. I know that this When you say it now, it's so obvious. Like if you do have a longer journey, which I think at least a majority of the brands that I'm talking to, we're not, yeah. we don't ever have these attribution conversations, but I do think it's really important, right?
Yeah.
To your point, like to take a look at like, what is it that you're evaluating
yeah.
that are bringing people to basically to your front door, right?
Yeah.
And then yeah. how you're nurturing them along just kind of the customer journey. With brands that you work with, do you find yourself having to educate people on just kind of attribution in order to have that next level discussion of like, all right, now these are the qualitative and these are the quantitative metrics that we're going to yeah. take a look at so that we can really prove or at least identify where we're getting the most revenue?
Yes, it is definitely a topic where you need to train the organization in. Like you need to go from thinking like single touch to multi-touch.
Yeah.
And what that means is that most customer journeys has a lot of touches involved, even though your data is saying he clicked here and then they bought. They might have been exposed to 5 influencers before they clicked the ad or
yeah. you know,
they might have read the newspaper or watching YouTube or stuff like that. A lot of things lead up to that decision for some products that are super complex. And then there is, you know, like a $50 sandal that an influencer posts about. This is something yeah. that, you know, you can make a decision upon on the spot and buy it.
Yeah.
Here I can fairly expect that the journey is going to be very short. So I want to see an effect of that click immediately.
Yeah.
Whereas for our average customers, the journey from first touch to you buy something is 6 yeah. months or something like that. So when you come very late in that journey, it's much more the work of a salesperson than it's, you know, a click on a Facebook ad or a Google ad or a LinkedIn ad.
Yeah.
And when the journeys are long, that's when I think it's super interesting to understand, are there any of the first touches that we can kind of replicate to get started more customer journeys?
Yeah, bringing more people at the top of the funnel, right?
Yeah, yeah. And bring the right kind of people into the top of the funnel.
Why, exactly. Because yeah. yeah. then it's not just a numbers game, right? It's really evaluating the quality of leads that you're getting through the front yeah. door, the quality of yeah. the web traffic that you're getting.
Exactly.
Do you see, this is going to sound like a strange question, but do you see a trend of where certain brands stop to kind of nurture the customer throughout the journey? Like if we're looking at it in comparison to the marketing funnel, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of top of funnel, which to me is the beginning of a customer journey, that middle of the funnel, which is like the education yeah. piece, and then you actually make a sale. Do you see that there is a trend of like where brands need the most help?
I've given a little bit up on funnel thinking just because.
Tell me why. Why have you given up on funnel thinking?
It's very nice to think that there's such a thing as a funnel where people do A, B, C, D, yeah. E, F, G. But I just think for a lot of cases, B2C as B2B, it's not that rational or
okay.
it takes longer time. So I think my best advice is just to continuously post quality content in front of your target audiences, because at least when you talk about B2B, then people are not necessarily in market right now. Typically you yeah. say like it's only like 1-3% of your total market that are out buying right now.
Yeah.
If that's true, then you just want to continuously stay up top of mind with, you know, top quality content that, you know, inspires them, makes them smarter or makes them laugh. So yeah. when they're at that point of time where they're looking to buy sandals or an ice cream or a B2B software, then it's your brand name that is on top there.
What you're saying makes complete sense. I also love that you're going away from funnel thinking. I probably will never go away from funnel thinking, but I'm right there with you. I know you kind of have to, yeah. but I'm right there with you to think that it's as simple as going from the top to the bottom. I also think that there are a lot of just kind of marketing initiatives that are very top of funnel with the expectation of bottom of funnel performance, right? Like
yeah.
I am going to show them this ad and they are going to want to purchase. And then yeah. we're always forgetting this, like, why would they purchase based on this?
Yeah.
Do you make purchases based on that? You don't. You make purchases yeah, yeah. after seeing something so often. So now, my follow-up question to that is, while in theory that makes sense, I think as a marketer, we're in a really tough position to say, hey, let's spend more time on the quality content. Let's spend more time on the brand awareness, because it's going to feed into the customer journey that'll ultimately make the sale. So how am I going to prove marketing works from a brand awareness perspective if it's not bringing in the revenue right away? Or is there something I should start tracking with brand awareness so that I can tie it back to that revenue dollar?
Yeah, one of the advices that I keep repeating is if you're in doubt whether something works, it probably doesn't. If you don't have that feeling that, you know, it's like, you know, the light starts blinking, or like, you know, you see the, your workshop is like telling you there's more sales than usual.
Yeah.
In absence of these things, you need to start thinking critical about whether it's a good idea you do this or not. But actually then today, like, a technical answer to what you're saying here is that there is actually starting to be a lot more technologies available that can help. I'm sure that at Grin you do some of these things as well. But
there's
this thing as that's called customer data platforms nowadays that can continuously write down the behavior of what is Katja doing. So initially you would just be somebody anonymous, and then they'll keep a log of what are you doing while you're anonymous. Yeah. And then at some point, as you identify yourself, either when you complete a purchase order or download an ebook or whatever you do, then they get the identity of you that they can join together with what you did while you were anonymous.
Yeah.
And even with your consent to do it. So you might have had 10 visits to that website before you bought anything, and they might actually have a logbook of those 10 visits. There are technical stuff that makes it easier nowadays. But again, it depends very much on how your buyer journeys are. If I'm a Rolex or like Mercedes or something like that,
You know,
try attributing sponsoring Wimbledon or like a Formula One.
Exactly. I guess that's what I'm talking about. But you're also talking about brands that have built up so much brand equity that their name is just synonymous with something, right?
Yeah.
Like Rolex, it's synonymous with like this class and all of that stuff. So I think for myself, I'm always wondering, obviously, like you said, we all want the sales, but what you're talking about, that brand awareness and building brand equity, how do you prove out the value of this brand equity from a data standpoint? How do you prove that it's helping the customer move?
Mm. It needs to kind of be like a game of ping pong between what are the activities that you're carrying out and what happens in the time after.
Yeah.
And then you kind of continuously as a team need to talk about, we did these things, we saw this effect, now we're going back and trying some more of this thing. But I think it's us as marketers, we really, really need to try to explain what's going on.
Yeah.
Because we're spending a lot of money on behalf of the company. So we should also really, really care about our activities, whether they're worth it or not.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely makes sense. In your experience, then, we've been talking about like the marketer's plight on attribution, but how do the sales and the marketing team need to connect or synergize? That sounds so cheesy.
Yeah.
But essentially, how do they need to connect so that they're working together and not like in silos?
This is something we talk a lot about in our company and in B2B in general, because in B2B, then marketing can only attract or create the demand.
Yeah.
They still need the salespeople to talk to the customers and maybe go through months of negotiations and explaining before you sell anything.
Yeah.
So if those two people are not speaking to each other, you quite often risk coming into a very bad place. We typically talk about the importance of sales and marketing alignment. And what we basically mean by that is that we should actually, with our time and money, try to support each other. So like low practical examples can be the salesperson walking into the marketing room and telling the marketing people, look, the customer calls, the meetings I like the most are with companies that look like A, B, C, D.
Yeah.
They're this size, it's this role, they're from California or they're from New York or stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they very clearly describe, these are the people I like to talk with.
Yeah.
And the marketers need to go out and based whatever activities they're doing based on trying to attract this particular persona.
Yeah.
Because the opposite way, marketing can be attracting the perfect personas to sell to, but if the salespeople never actually pick up the phone or answer the emails that come in, then all the money you put into marketing is probably or like likely wasted. It's, you know, a responsibility on both sides to make sure that everybody's trying to pull into the right, the same direction.
So I love that you're saying that because, well, I 100% believe that. I think it's a team effort. And so often, you know, marketing's left in this island of like, well, they're doing a lot of stuff, but how is that helping me as a salesperson, especially in B? What's the equivalent in B2C then? Is like listening to your customer? Is it understanding B2C and even D2C, right? Like what's the equivalent of connecting with your sales department? Is it connecting with like the exec level of or the overall like business strategy? What is that equivalent in B2C, D2C?
Yeah, that's a good question, Katja. And I think in the difference is in B2C, we as individuals can make the buying decision quite fast.
Yeah.
So the ads that we run, the posts we buy from influencers, they actually have an immediate effect. So there's not always a salesperson involved in this. So the marketing activity should hopefully have an immediate effect on your revenue going up.
Yeah.
People coming into the web shop and buying certain items after you run the ads.
Yeah, that makes sense. What kind of technology would I want to make sure that I have in place to be able to map out my customer journey so that I can really create that customer journey map that leads me down to like the island of revenue?
Nirvana.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, it's if you think about a customer journey from like before anybody have heard about you until they've bought your product.
Yeah.
What are all the places that your brand are touching these, your customer?
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't leave a digital trace, the touches that you have with your customers, then it's very hard for you to map what's actually going on. So we can take some practical examples. Let's say you have a phone number on your website and this phone number just goes into your own mobile phone, which doesn't leave any trace that you talk with Stefan on this date.
Yeah.
Or anything like that, then that touch, you can't really map it anywhere because it's not recorded. It could be that you just, you know, send emails from your personal Gmail account, not using a marketing automation tool. Then you can't see which emails did you send to this customer, did they click it, etc.
Yeah.
The same with, you know, I'm sure with Grin as well, that you get a good list of which influencers posted which piece of content for you. And, you know, if you actually don't have that trace that some of these things took place, then you can't go back and try to put all these pieces into the journey.
Yeah.
And then like what we do in, you know, with our technology, but what people can do themselves as well, is that we pull all of this data into one data warehouse, you know, into one big bucket. And then we try to sketch out a timeline of this took place on this date. And then the next day we saw them was this date. So you can try to like pull out the data out of all the silos and map into one timeline.
Well, and as a marketer, I think I just love data warehouses because I'm pulling, because I'm pulling from 12 different places, right? Because me, I think of it from a distribution channel standpoint. If I've got my influencers in one, I also have my email strategy. I have my website strategy. I have my experiential strategy, right? With events and whatnot. And then I've got my entire like paid advertising. And maybe on top of that, there's CRO. And on top of that, there are other initiatives, right? So it sounds like the best solution is to pull all of that information. If not, it sounds like you would be living in a ginormous spreadsheet of I've pulled it from here, I've pulled it from there. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, any interaction you have with the customers, try to make it have a digital reflection. And once you have that in place, get it all into one place and start cleaning it up and organizing it so you can see what's actually going on.
How do you feel about the iOS update and like marketers living up that cookie-less life? Because you're talking about having that digital footprint. And then there's this real worry, especially from like something that has worked before in the past, all of these paid social and like these programmatic things. So what do you say to that?
I remember the good old days where like you can retarget on Facebook for 180 days. it was hard not to make marketing work for a short period, because you can just put traffic on your website and then retarget for 180 days on Facebook. So I miss these days. I think that forever it's going to be a little bit of a cat and mouse game of, you know, different things stop working and other things start working. I think those who are most in trouble are actually the ad platforms, because ad platforms per se sit on the outside, trying to understand what takes place on the website and what revenue comes out of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Like with these customer data platforms, they sit in the middle and then they can look at the click came from Facebook and then they went on to buy inside the Shopify e-commerce system.
Yeah.
Whereas Facebook is on the outside. They might have a pixel on your website, but that gets deleted super fast. So there is, I think I'm seeing more and more solutions to this pain, but not for the ad platforms. I follow a different kind of podcast as well to try to get smarter on it all the time.
Well, I think it's tough. For me, I'm always going to push more influencer marketing because that's evergreen. It doesn't have to have a cookie. People are watching people.
Yeah. I was just about to say, like, if you just make sure that the audience is the right audience for your company, then you don't have to, like, you know, one-to-one measure everything. As long as it's the right people who continuously get the right message, then you're bound to see it working at some point.
That's true. That's very true.
Or you have a bad product or stuff like that.
Well, then there's a whole other list of things that you needed to go through. It's not always marketing. It is the product. It's the company. It's the values. The whole nine yards.
It's not all our fault, all of it.
It's not, I promise. Okay, so at this point, it's prediction time. I'd love to hear what you see just kind of changing for marketers in like the next year or two. What kind of changes do you see?
It seems like that this economic turmoil, I don't know how it is in your industry, but in our like tech startup industry, there's a lot of concerns about this economic turmoil coming up. And I think if there's less budgets, less optimism, we're going to see a bigger and bigger push for stuff like attribution or like more plainly explained, why are we spending money on these things? What are we getting out of spending money here? So like a push for efficiency out of all activities that goes for sales, product, and marketing. And I think like as this episode comes out, I think if you're not already starting about thinking about how to prove the value of your work, you should definitely start, because the worst situation is that you're like caught off guard and then the CFO comes and says, I think we're going to cut your budget with 50%. And you're like, okay. So you need to like assume that responsibility of explaining we're doing these things and we're doing it because this, this, and this. And I think we see this kind of outcome of it. So be prepared for efficiency questions about everything you do.
I love that prediction because it is true. You have to not just prove that you are getting revenue, but there is a method to the madness. There's a reason that you're going down this path as a marketer. It could be brand awareness. It could be building brand equity, but you have to be able to, like to your point earlier on, as you said, have the qualitative with the quantitative as well too. And sometimes it's a little more balanced on the qualitative side. Like this is the, look at all of these places that we're at, you know, this name recognition, like this provides value. This is why we're doing it.
I could imagine like if you do it well with the right influencers, then you start also seeing micro influencers coming inbound asking for, you know,
absolutely.
Can I also, so like, you know,
that's take a screenshots good point.
Of those mails that come as a, like qualitative proof that we're definitely getting our product shown for in front of the right or through the right people.
Oh, I love that. We're getting more inbound. I do. I have a lot of love this early in the morning as we're recording. But I mean,
coffee's working.
It is. It's working. Yeah. I had a little cough attack earlier. Now I'm prepped. I've got coffee in my system. But it is true. I mean, and that, you know, I think that that's a very great qualitative way to show that what you're doing from an awareness standpoint really does impact. I think from an influencer side, for sure, like, hey, we're getting more inbound requests to partner with us. But I also think at a more macro level for any brand, it's your direct traffic to your website, right? Like you should see those numbers elevate if you're building up that brand equity, and it's taking a look at all of those channels as well too. Well, Stefan, this has been fantastic, enlightening. I appreciate you. I know we have moved this around a few times, so I really appreciate you taking the time just to kind of come and talk to me about marketing and the customer journey.
Favorite topic.
Same. Yeah. Well, thank you again so much.
Thank you, Katja.
As a marketer, I am always interested in talking about attribution and chasing down the data to prove ROI in something. What really stood out for me in this particular podcast episode is how the customer journey informs that attribution model that as marketers we're always talking about. But not only that, I also really like that he said, without knowing or really understanding the customer journey, whatever data that you're looking at could possibly not be true. It puts a ton of weight on that marketer to truly have their ducks in a row to get the revenue numbers they're looking for with the strategies that they're implementing. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars, or better yet, share your favorite episode in a review. Connect with me on social. You can find me on LinkedIn, Katja Allison. And if you are interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. That's grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.